All right, so properly speaking tonight, we'll be in Exodus chapter 31, but we are coming to the end of a section here in Exodus. So because Exodus 31 is kind of a short chapter, and because we are coming to the end of this section on the tabernacle, I wanted to do a little bit of review. Also for those of you who might not have been here for all of the sessions. So, as a reminder, at the end of Exodus chapter 19, if you'd like to turn back a few pages, the end of Exodus 19, the people of Israel and the Lord visit Mount Sinai. And Exodus 20 through Exodus 23, so four chapters, Exodus 20 through Exodus 23, is what is commonly called the Book of the Covenant, and where Moses begins Exodus chapter 20 by presenting the Ten Commandments, which will be important for us tonight in Exodus chapter 31. And then in Exodus 21, 22, and 23, a series of laws that he gives to his people whom he has rescued out of slavery in Egypt. And so that goes through to the end of Exodus chapter 23. And then in Exodus 24, the people of Israel affirm their covenant with God. And this is really important. So, for example, Exodus 24, verse 1, then God said to Moses, come up to the Lord, you and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, and 70 of the elders of Israel, and you shall worship at a distance. Moses alone, however, shall come near to the Lord, but they shall not come near, nor shall the people come up with him. Verse 3, then Moses came and recounted to the people all the words of the Lord and all the ordinances. And all the people answered with one voice and said, all the words which the Lord has spoken, we will do. Verse 4, Moses wrote down all the words of the Lord. And so we see Moses here writing the book of the covenant. In verse 3, of course, the people of Israel agree that they will be obedient. And then it's actually called the Book of the Covenant in verse 7 of Exodus 24. If you see there, then he took the Book of the Covenant and read it in the hearing of the people. And they said, all that the Lord has spoken, we will do, and we will be obedient. Right. And so here at Mount Sinai, God presents the Book of the Covenant through the pen of Moses, and the people of Israel agree to be obedient to the words of the covenant. And then there's this incredible couple of verses where the nobles go up to the top of Sinai, and at the end of verse 11, they beheld God and they ate and drank. So just an incredible feast of the covenant, as it were, that God has with Moses and the elders of Israel. And then at the end of chapter 24, God calls Moses up onto the top of Sinai, and verse 16, and the glory of the Lord rested on Mount Sinai, and the cloud covered it for 6 days. And on the seventh day, he called to Moses from the midst of the cloud. And to the eyes of the sons of Israel, the appearance of the glory of the Lord was like a consuming fire on the mountaintop. And Moses entered the midst of the cloud as he went up to the mountain. And Moses was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. And so Exodus chapters 25 through 31 are the account of Moses on the top of Mount Sinai getting these directions from the Lord as to the sanctuary or the tabernacle that is to be built, which will be the place where the people of Israel will worship Yahweh, their covenant God, with whom they have entered into covenant, as we saw in Exodus 24. So in Exodus 25, there are the offerings for the sanctuary. So these are the raw materials that are brought to Moses, that will be brought to Moses for the building of the tabernacle and all of its furniture. We see beginning in verse 10 of Exodus chapter 25, the Ark of the Covenant, upon which sits the mercy seat. In Exodus 25, beginning in verse 23, we see the table of the showbread. Beginning in verse 31, the golden lampstand. And these, this table of showbread and the golden lampstand will be in the holy place. The table of showbread being on the north side and the lampstand being on the south side of the holy place. And actually, I have here, and I'll do a little sharing of my screen, and this doesn't help necessarily in the audio, but here is the lampstand that is from the ESV Study Bible. And then here's the tabernacle complex with the holy place and the most holy place. And then here is the table of the showbread. Let's see. Let me share my screen with you so you can see that. Let's do that. Share. Can you guys see the table of the showbread there?
Yeah.
Okay. And then here's the tabernacle complex, which we've seen previously. And then here is the lampstand that is in the holy place. When we get to Exodus chapter 26, we see the curtains of linen. So the curtains of goat hair beginning in verse 7, the boards in the sockets beginning in verse 15, and then the veil in the screen beginning in verse 31 of Exodus chapter 26. And so you can see all of these things going here. This is the tabernacle tent with its coverings, the holy place and the most holy place. In Exodus chapter 27, we talked about the bronze altar. So this is the altar outside here in the outside in the courtyard. This is where the animal sacrifices took place. And then we see in Exodus 27, beginning in verse 9, the court of the tabernacle. In Exodus 28, we saw the garments of the priest. And so we can see those here, right? With all of its different aspects. You had the ephod beginning in verse 6. You had the breastpiece beginning in verse 15 of Exodus 28. And then over on verse 31 of Exodus 28, you had the robe beginning in verse 36. You had the plate for the head that on which was engraved a seal holy to the Lord. And then in Exodus 29, there was an entire chapter on how the priests were to be consecrated. So a very extensive chapter. Beginning in verse 10, there were the three sacrifices, the sin offering, the burnt offering, and then the wave offering. And this was a seven-day ordination of Aaron, the high priest, and his sons. And then in verse 31 of Exodus chapter 29, there was the food for the priests. In Exodus chapter 30, we saw the altar of incense, which is here. So this is a small replica of the altar, the bronze altar that actually exists inside of the holy place, just outside of the veil that separates the holy place from the most holy place. And this is what we talked about last time, and the different types of incense that was offered on the altar of incense that was representative of multiple things, including the prayers of the saints rising up into the nostrils of God. In Exodus 30, beginning in verse 11, we talked a little bit about the sanctuary shekel, which was pointed out in the meeting after the meeting last time, that one shekel is worth about 27 cents. And so it was certainly within the realm of all of the Israelites to bring that shekel as the temple tax. And then in Exodus chapter 30, verse 15, we pointed out that the rich shall not pay more and the poor shall not pay less than the half shekel when you give the contribution to the Lord to make atonement for yourselves. And we saw that all of the Israelites had to bring this same temple tax as an annual contribution for the worship of God. And then in verse 17 of Exodus chapter 30, we saw the bronze laver or the bronze basin. And this is where the temple priests would wash themselves and the offerings. And then in verse 22 of Exodus chapter 30, we saw the holy anointing oil. And beginning in verse 34, the incense. And so at this point, we've come to the place where at the end of Exodus chapter 30, we now have all of the veil, the screen, the furniture, everything that is needed for the tabernacle through which and at which the people of Israel will worship Yahweh, their covenant God. And so now we come to chapter 31, where we are going to see that God provides the men who will oversee the fabrication of the tabernacle. So as we pick up in Exodus 31, verse 1. Now the Lord Yahweh spoke to Moses, saying, "See, I have called by name Bezalel, son of Uri, son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah. And I have filled him with the Spirit of God in wisdom, in understanding, in knowledge, and in all kinds of craftsmanship, to make artistic designs for work in gold, in silver, and in bronze, and in the cutting of stones for settings, and in the carving of wood, that he may work in all kinds of craftsmanship. And behold, I myself have appointed with him Oholiab, the son of Ahisamach, of the tribe of Dan. And in the hearts of all who are skillful I have put skill, that they may make all that I have commanded you, the tent of meeting, the ark of testimony, and the mercy seat upon it, and all the furniture of the tent, the table also and its utensils, and the pure gold lampstand with all its utensils, and the altar of incense, the altar of burnt offering also with all its utensils, and the laver and its stand, the woven garments as well, and the holy garments for Aaron the priest, and the garments of his sons with which to carry on their priesthood, the anointing oil also, and the fragrant incense for the holy place. They are to make them according to all that I have commanded you." And so we see here now that after God has laid out the tabernacle itself, and in all of its intricate detail, and we have spent several hours going through all of the aspects, the furniture and the utensils and the curtains and even the very things that held the curtains onto the stands themselves. We see now God provides the men to oversee the fabrication of this tabernacle. And one here, the first one in verse 2, Bezalel, son of Uri, son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah. He is the foreman on this job. And we should point out, of course, here that God chooses these men, specifically Bezalel, to be the foreman. And so we see God, and we see this also in the New Testament, right? When we consider the spiritual gifts of those who are in the church, God is dispensing these gifts to the people in the church, right, as he determines what is needed in the church for all of the men and women who are given spiritual gifts. And the same here we see in Exodus chapter 31, verse 2. It's interesting to note that Bezalel is the son of Uri and the son of Hur. So Hur has already come up a couple of different times. If you want to go back and take a look, you can find this Hur in Exodus 17, verse 10. As well as Exodus 24, verse 15. So a relatively prominent member of the tribe of Judah who appears a few times here in Exodus. In verse 3, it's very clear that Yahweh is speaking, and he's very clear about the fact that it is he who has filled Bezalel with the Spirit of God, in wisdom, in understanding, in knowledge, and in all kinds of craftsmanship. And then in verse 4, the New American Standard renders that to make artistic designs. It's actually literally to devise devices. So it looks also here as if God is not only giving him the wisdom in the craftsmanship itself, but God is giving Bezalel wisdom in actually creating the tools that will ultimately be used to do the engraving, to do the cutting, to do the melting even of the gold so that the furniture can be covered in gold. And so we see God here providing all of this artistic ability. And if you read, for example, Matthew Henry's commentary on Exodus 31, he would say that art itself is a gift of God. And I know, Brother Tim, we've had this conversation on a few occasions, but we see here that the tabernacle and then later the temple that we find that Solomon builds, they're very beautiful things, right? And so God is very interested in beauty and in art, and God gives this wisdom and understanding and this craftsmanship. And of course, he also appoints this man named Oholiab in verse 6 of the tribe of Dan. And then in verse 6, he also says, "In the hearts of all who are skillful, I have put skill, that they may make all that I have commanded you." So we see that Bezalel as the foreman and Oholiab, it seems to be his right-hand man, but it seems like there's all kinds of people that are involved in the creation of this beautiful tabernacle where the people of Israel are called to worship Yahweh himself, their covenant God. And so this is really important that we see God's calling and God's anointing of these people to do the work to create all of these things. But in verse 12, it's very important to see, after he has identified the foreman and his right-hand man and all the people who have skill, the Lord reminds them of the Sabbath, beginning in verse 12. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "But as for you, speak to the sons of Israel, saying, 'You shall surely observe my Sabbaths, for this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord who sanctifies you. Therefore you are to observe the Sabbath, for it is holy to you. Everyone who profanes it shall surely be put to death. For whoever does any work on it, that person shall be cut off from among his people. For 6 days work may be done, but on the seventh day there is a Sabbath of complete rest, holy to the Lord. Whoever does any work on the Sabbath day shall surely be put to death. So the sons of Israel shall observe the Sabbath, to celebrate the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. It is a sign between me and the sons of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, but on the seventh day he ceased from labor and was refreshed.'" So it's paused there. So why then does God remind the Israelites of the Sabbath? This is clearly not the first time we've seen the Sabbath. We saw the Sabbath introduced even before the Book of the Covenant on Sinai. Then we saw the Sabbath as the fourth commandment in the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20. And now we see the Sabbath again. And so God is hammering home, as it were, this sign of the Sabbath. And this is important at this place because clearly God has given to Moses the tabernacle, right? And now the work of building and constructing the tabernacle is going to begin. But before that work begins, right before Moses comes down from the top of Mount Sinai, he reminds him again. So build the tabernacle, he's telling Moses and the Israelites. Build the tabernacle as a place of worship. Absolutely, you should do that. But don't forget the sign of the Sabbath as well. In your zeal for building and machining and fabbing the tabernacle, do not forget the Sabbath. That you should work 6 days, but then rest on the seventh day. And again, it's a pretty extensive paragraph, and I don't want to go necessarily into it here again tonight. We've talked extensively about the Sabbath and what we believe about how the Sabbath applies in terms of the new covenant. But again, the reminder is here, and it's important for the Israelites in case they forget in their zeal for the construction of the tabernacle. Finally, in chapter 31, we see here verse 18. "And when he," God, Yahweh, "had finished speaking with him," Moses, "upon Mount Sinai, he gave Moses the two tablets of the testimony, tablets of stone, written by the finger of God." So important here. So there are three aspects to this. These 10 words, or the Decalogue, first, they're written on two tables. And we've talked about this before, but just as a reminder, what are the two tables for? Most commentators believe that the two tables represent the first four commandments on the first table and the second six commandments on the second table. This would represent the Israelites' obligations to God on the first table and the Israelites' obligations to one another on the second table. And we've talked about this in the past as well, but you can remember these two tablets or two tables of stone as being represented in the cross, right? You have the vertical beam of the cross, which is the Israelites' vertical worship to God. And then you have the horizontal beam of the cross, which reminds us of our neighbors. And of course, Jesus in Matthew 22, he recalls the greatest commandment: to love the Lord your God, all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. And then the second great commandment is just like the first: to love your neighbor as yourself. And so most commentators would say that these two tables are the obligations of the Israelites toward God and toward one another. There's a minority of commentators who believe that all 10 commandments were written on both tables. So one of which for God, basically God to have, and one of which for the Israelites to have. But that's a relatively minority view, and I tend to take the majority view on this one. They are written on tablets of stone, right? So they're not written on papyrus or lambskins or anything like that, right? And so we see the permanency of the Decalogue here as they are written on stone. I mean, you can imagine what would be more permanent than stone. Of course, the little bit of foreshadowing as we move on into Exodus is that they weren't quite as permanent as we might think. But anyway, certainly more permanent than something written on papyrus or on a lambskin. And of course, finally, we see them written by the very finger of God. And this is so significant. It's the only thing that we have actually in the revealed scriptures that is written by the finger of God. And so I would add a couple of comments here. So there's the handwriting on the wall in Daniel, right, which was inscribed there. It's not written by the finger of God like the Ten Commandments are. And then I would also note that this is fundamentally different from what we believe about the inspiration of the scriptures themselves. So the New Testament, Peter says, men moved by God. So the New Testament scriptures especially, and the Old Testament scriptures as well, written by men, in the words of men, by the, excuse me, by the pens of men, inspired by God. And that's different from the way the Ten Commandments were written on the tablets of stone by the very finger of God. So, that's really the end of Exodus chapter 31 and the end of a very significant section of the book of Exodus as God lays out for the Israelites how they are to worship Him, the priesthood, the sacrifices, the tabernacle. And so now beginning in Exodus chapter 32, Moses is going to come down the mountain, and we will find then in Exodus chapter 32 the account of the golden calf. Pastor Mike, anything? All right. So next time we come together, we will pick up in Exodus chapter 32. Short session tonight.